Good afternoon. From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Premery. A new play, These Birds, a play inspired by death, flowers, and Farkle, opened in Juneau last week. The show was born from interviews and conversations with local residents about death and dying. The Theater Alaska play is written by Juneau playwright Mary Ellefson, but the seed for the project started with hospice chaplain Claire Richardson. Richardson wanted to find a way to inspire people to talk about death. She says creating a play from community-based interviews was a vehicle to ground stories of death and dying in Juneau. Here she is talking about it on KTOO's Juneau Afternoon show late last month.
I kept thinking there has to be a way to have people to be able to have conversations about death. It's so challenging. Even with all the books and web resources and everything that we can offer, it's that personal connection.
Richardson contacted Ellefson, who has previously written plays based on interviews with Juneau residents and Alaskans across the state. The women conducted about 25 interviews, and Ellefson said it was a profound journey. Though death can be a somber topic, Ellefson says there's so much life in connecting through stories. And she says she's grateful for everyone who they interviewed and for the 8 performers who brought the script to life.
These stories live in our community. They are part of us. They are of us. We hear ourselves here, whether that's a whale breaching or someone talking about a tragedy.
These Birds, a play inspired by death, flowers, and Farkle, runs through February 15th with 2 performances this week on Friday and Saturday, and 4 shows next week at various locations. Theater Alaska offers ticketed and free performances. Find details and the full schedule of performances and post-show conversations at theateralaska.org. And you're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Kremery. Thank you for tuning in. The Ketchikan Indian community purchased a former resort north of town with the goal of converting it into an addiction healing center. But a handful of residents in the neighborhood expressed opposition for the project at a recent Borough Planning Commission meeting. KRBD's Hunter Morrison was there and has the story.
The Ketchikan Gateway Borough Planning Commission convened until nearly midnight Tuesday and listened to what the zoning clerk said was the most public testimony she's seen since she was hired a year and a half ago. Nearly a dozen North End residents spoke out against a rezoning request for the site of the former Salmon Falls Resort. The 11-acre facility was bought by KIC, the Ketchikan Indian Community, last fall with the intent of turning it into a holistic healing center for people struggling with substance misuse.
This project will stabilize lives, keep families together, create jobs, protect the environment, and most importantly, it will save lives.
That's Emily Edenshaw, the tribe's CEO, speaking about the plan for the site. She says Salmon Falls is a suitable site for a healing center.
Our ancestors endured so we can stand here today, and our children are watching what we choose to build. We intend and hope to build something worthy of both.
Commissioners and meeting attendees agreed that addiction treatment needs to be a priority in Ketchikan. That sentiment reflects a 2020 study which indicates that drug and alcohol treatment is one of the most pressing health needs in the community. KIC's request was to rezone 5 adjoining lots on the property. This could essentially allow for a broad range of retail, wholesale, and service establishments. The tracts of land are currently zoned for recreational and residential development. Some community members spoke in opposition of the rezoning request itself. The nearby Waterfall Creek subdivision was established in the 1980s to preserve rural residential character. Jack Lee is one of several residents of that subdivision who testified to the Planning Commission. He said that over the last few weeks, he's met with a growing number of neighbors to discuss concerns about the old resort site.
We want nothing more than to preserve the single-family residential qualities, values, and nature of our property. Even one break will set a dangerous precedent out there and make us subject to future challenges, and we don't want to deal with that.
Colby Slaniker is another area resident who testified against the rezoning request. He's worried that if the healing center falls through and KIC sells the property, it could, quote, become anything. But some property owners in the area of the former resort testified against more than just the rezoning request. Their concerns included potential property value impacts, security risks, and emergency response times, among other worries. Eliza Connolly believes KIC's plan for the property is vague and asked the Planning Commission to deny or postpone the zoning request until the tribe produces a binding description of the intended use.
Approving rezoning based on a vague or undefined operational plan creates long-term risk. Once the zoning is changed, the use could expand into whatever this is from this point.
KIC staff said at the meeting they're still fleshing out a plan for the facility, but are happy to meet with residents to address their concerns. Eden Shaw could not immediately be reached for further comment, but she said at the meeting that the facility will model the tribally run Didgualik Wellness Center in Washington State. She said the benefits of healing centers are personal for her because she once went through one.
I'm very proud to say that I was able to get the care that I needed after my husband died, and it saved my life. I was able to get housing after my husband died. Housing saved my life.
In the end, the Planning Commission determined that KIC's intended use for the property fits within the parameters of its current zoning classifications, and rezoning wasn't necessary. The recommendation board voted 6-1 to deny the rezoning request. The request will go before the Borough Assembly for final votes on March 16th. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Hunter Morrison.
Those who knew and loved Marlene Johnson say she was in constant motion, either behind the scenes or on the forefront of the major issues that have shaped life for Alaska Natives for more than 60 years. The Tlingit leader died last week at the age of 90. KNBA's Rhonda McBride looks at her life and her legacy.
Here is Marlene Johnson's recipe for leadership in her own words.
Alaska Natives, I don't care where you're from, need to be involved. They need to sit on boards. They need to sit on commissions. They need to go to meetings. They need to be heard.
That was Johnson talking with the late Native journalist Nellie Moore in 2011 on the 40th anniversary of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Today, Anxa remains the largest land claim settlement in the nation's history, one that Johnson helped to steer through Congress.
The Alaska Native perspective needs to be heard, and they need to know that we aren't sitting back there on a stump doing nothing, that we are, just like everybody else. We have a brain and we use it. We have muscles and we use it. And we have respect for each other, and we don't call other people names like they sometimes call us.
The 1960s was a tough time to be an Alaska Native and a woman.
The men had the voice. They were out front. But somehow, Marlene became a voice among all those men. I often wondered, how did she do it?
Back then, Irene Rowan had a front row seat in Washington, D.C. She worked for the federal government and became part of an ANCSA support group called Alaskans on the Potomac.
She was royalty. People looked up to her. She was rich. She was rich with knowledge and with enthusiasm.
Rosita Worrell says Marlene Johnson was one of a kind.
She exemplified what we know and recognize as a leader. And they don't come along very often.
Worrell, who is president of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, says Johnson had a leadership style all her own, someone always ready to listen, even if she didn't agree.
And I don't think people thought of her as a woman or a man. They just admired her leadership capabilities.
Johnson's granddaughter, Vera Starbard, says this was an amazing accomplishment for a woman who navigated times that were far from being gender and color blind.
She always insisted on being taken seriously, but at the same time, she had to figure out how to maneuver in that world, let her voice be heard when literally some people would not hear it.
Starbard says people forget that Johnson was a single mom who not only raised six kids, but was also a businesswoman. She co-owned a regional air taxi service in her home village of Hoona and became one of the first women to chair a Native corporation, a job she held on Sea Alaska's board for a decade. She also helped to found many of the educational organizations and nonprofits that make up today's social service safety net.
People don't realize how different Alaska would be without her. Certainly, Alaska Native lives.
Without ANCSA, we would be back where we were in the early 60s, where discrimination would still be here. I'm a firm believer of that.
In a 2009 interview with researcher Dr. Thomas Thornton, Johnson said Native corporations, with their wealth and resources, helped to change the way Alaska Natives were treated. She recalled her days when her family moved to Juneau in the late 1940s so she could go to high school. Johnson said she and her girlfriends would go out late at night on a mission.
I shouldn't confess doing anything wrong in my life. But a few of us that were considered breeds would go down the street and rip the signs off of the bars, and there's bars all the way up and down South Franklin Street that aren't there now, that said, no Coasties, no Indians, or no dogs allowed.
But somewhere along the line, she made the transition from activist to diplomat. Emil Nadi, the first president of the Alaska Federation of Natives, said that she was pivotal in the land claims fight.
It was just part of that age, the chauvinism. But she stood on her own, her qualifications. She wasn't put there because she was a woman. She was put there because she was an effective advocate.
Nadi visited Johnson not long before she died. And when he realized her time was nearing its end, he felt a wave of loneliness because there are only about a dozen people, he says, who really know the story of ANCSA.
There are 500 stories. Everybody who was involved has a story. You look at the same event, see it different. So you get all kinds of stories, but in there somewhere is what really happened.
Now, there is one less member in that land claims band of warriors. But Rosita Worrell says Johnson will always be remembered.
The night before she left us, we had just spectacular northern lights. That said to me, those are our warriors ready to embrace this leader in the spirit world.
In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 43 degrees and raining. It looks like we have some more rain coming tonight and tomorrow, with a high of 45 tomorrow as well. And that weather pattern looks like it'll hold for the next few days. This is KTOO. Thank you for tuning in.